Radio Network.
It's now time for Connecting Caregivers with author, speaker, caregiver advocate, and talk show host, Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for caregivers.
Good afternoon and welcome to Caregivers on the Talk Network, where you find help and hope. With me, guest host Rick Incorvia and co-host Jennifer Preem, and our awesome producer, Ed. Hey, Ed, thanks for being on the boards. So glad you decided to be here with us today. I have a very special guest today. Happens to be a friend of mine, a newer friend, Terry Hitchcock. Terry has a pretty wild story, and nothing is impossible is the theme, and I think after you've spent some time with us, you'll understand why he believes nothing is impossible. Terry has books written about him, movies in the making, a documentary. But before we go too further, I'd like to let Terry say hello and give you just a quick introduction. Terry, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you for asking me, Rick.
Certainly. So I wanna go back 25 years, all right? 25 years, a very important event took place. Can you take us back to 1996 and just put us into your headspace a little bit? What were you about to attempt?
Well, first of all, I wasn't a runner. I want to make sure everybody knows that. But I decided that I wanted to run a distance from Minneapolis to the Olympics in Atlanta. And very foolishly, I decided I was going to run the equivalent of a marathon or more every single day. The media told me that the world's record was 3 days. And I ended up running 75 marathons in 75 consecutive days.
Unbelievable. Just in case somebody didn't quite catch that, a marathon every day for 75 consecutive days.
That's correct. Okay. Would I do it again? No.
No. Are you still paying for it?
I've been paying for it for a long time.
I would imagine.
How long is a marathon? For those of us that don't
26.2 miles?
Yeah, I always say 27 miles.
27 miles every day for 75 consecutive days.
I average about 31 miles a day.
I can't even imagine. So we're going to go through some of the things that went through. We already have a call? Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my God.
Well, let's say hello to the caller. Hello, caller. Are you there? I'm not here.
Can you hear me okay now?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay.
There we go. Who am I speaking with?
Peter Jessen, Portland, Oregon.
Peter from Portland.
I heard part of the conversation that you had with Terry. Terry and I are old friends. And I started this a few years ago, and I was wanted to ask a question.
Okay.
Terry did not set this up, but he did let me know and a few other friends that he's going to be on. And I thought when I called in, I wanted to ask a specific question. One of the things that we're dealing with right now in the country is, of course, we'll use neutral terms, mass migration coming in. And people are having tremendous discussion over what to do with these people. And people who are here are upset, and people who are coming in are not. And I'm going to ask a question. Terry ran, I lived in Minneapolis, and Terry, it was part of the time that Terry was there, and he had the largest incubator, job training incubator in the country. And he also did a number of them in Atlanta. I think he started over 180 companies. And I'm intrigued by the fact that in the minority community, before the Great Society, over 80% of black families were two-parent, and 40% of blacks had their own businesses, small mostly. And today, that's 27% two-family, and only 7% have their own businesses. So we know it can be done, public policy getting in the way. I was wondering if, Terry, you could address the kind of thing that can be done with all these folks coming in, because I know most of them do want to get to work, they want to support their families. What can be done from your experience working in, well, any community, but in this particular case, because he also did some work with Morristown College, to set up either through a church or through historically black universities, a program that would deal with providing these kind of incubators or accelerator incubators, as some people like to say.
To make a difference in the lives of people.
Mm-hmm. And take care of themselves and work in a positive way in the communities that would allow them to connect with a broader range and do the benefit of everybody.
Any incubators, where if you have a dream, if you have a product, whatever, you go there, you're housed there, you get help with raising money, you get help with people who can guide you, what to do with a new business, mm-hmm. et cetera. I did that in Minnesota and ended up having the largest business incubator in the United States. My first year, I had over 80 companies. I bought for a dollar a rundown schoolhouse mm-hmm. and turned it into an incubator with every classroom being a new business. And then I had a side company that raised money. I've raised over $100 million for companies that needed a help or a break or whatever.
$100 million raised.
Yes. Yeah. I never got a no.
Back in 1996, $100 yeah. million.
Yeah.
Wow. Pretty amazing, Terry.
But I think that's what Peter is looking for.
Yes. It was very hard to understand.
It was really hard.
Very, very hard. So I'm sorry, Peter, that we weren't able to get a better reception on that phone call, but we do plan on talking about that as well. I wanted to first give Terry an opportunity to talk about the 25 miles and 20, or I'm sorry, about 30 miles a day, 75 consecutive days in a row. Why would you do something like that?
Well, I usually ask myself that the same question, but I wanted to do something for children. There were 33 million single parents and their children, and I really wanted to give back. I came up with the idea of running. I'm not a runner, but I was overweight at the time. I was 57. But I decided that, you know, if I could get out on the road and get the media to follow me, then perhaps I could go a few days. And my goal was the Olympics in Atlanta for Minneapolis. I started running and decided, you know, it was not fun, but it was certainly enjoyable to be out and running on the highway and meeting a lot of people. So I kept going, and pretty soon my body was rebelling. I had 11 pair of shoes that I was using, a New Balance, and I just was bound determined to keep going.
Now, did you have media following you?
Oh, every single day. The first 6 or 7 days, the media thought, you know, it was a prank. It was, this mm-hmm. guy will never do it. The world's record was 3 days, and he's still out there. And about mm-hmm. the seventh day, I noticed that they're with me every day. Mm-hmm. And it was a dream kind of coming true for me. I'm sorry.
Hi, Dad.
But anyways, I just kept going. I don't give up on dreams that I have. My grandfather told me nothing would be impossible, and I believed it.
I imagine there's some pretty serious logistics with that. I mean, where do you sleep at night? Who sets that up? You had to be half out of your mind by the time you were finished with the
race.
Well,
we had a trailer, okay, and I had a team with me.
Okay,
I had 6 young people. All from single parents. Mm. My son, I have 2 boys and 1 daughter. And one of my boys was with me doing all the laundry every day. And then my other son was driving the van. And there was always a place for me to stop and rest or whatever I needed. But there were days that, you know, there was a hurricane, there was a tornado in the neighborhood.
And you ran anyway.
Oh, yeah. You know, you just keep going. And you trust in my faith, I trust God to guide me and to carry me. And
you had to have that faith pretty seriously tested.
I was challenged many times, believe me.
Is there a a most dangerous moment that you were worried?
Yes, I was in Kentucky, and I was running down what they call Land Between the Lakes. It was a beautiful day, I remember. And I heard some breaking of branches to my left, which was some woods. And there was something backing out of it, and it was very dark in color. And I couldn't figure out what it was, so I slowed down, and I kept looking, and as it backed out, I said, oh, no, it's a bear. Well, it was a big bear. And so I looked at my feet, and I said, don't fail me now. And so I took off down the highway, and the bear went the other way. So I thought, oh, thank goodness. And so I didn't realize what the bear did to Huey. And the bear came back and came right beside me, and I could touch it. And I wasn't about to do that. And we went for about 300 feet together.
No way.
It went back in the woods. And I thought, no one's going to believe this. But in the documentary, you see the bear, and it is very large. And so about 2 months later, I was giving a speech to about 150 doctors and nurses in northern Minnesota. And some of them were Native Americans. And so after I got done my speech, one of the doctors came up and said, could you join us? And so I went into this room, and they had the chairs in a circle. And there was one chair in the middle of the circle.
For you.
And yeah, I knew that was mine.
Mm-hmm.
And so we talked about the bear, and we talked about the purpose of the bear in their culture. And in their culture, the bear represents direction, faith, and courage. And it made sense. And I started thinking about it, and that bear was there to give me the strength, to give me the purpose, and give me the direction. And I've never forgot that.
How far into the race were you? Days?
Oh, gosh. Probably halfway.
Wow. So and, over a month into it, you had me second guessing. Can I really do this?
Oh, every day.
Wow.
Every day, because I wasn't a runner. I trained for about 17 months. And I had an expert who was a trainer. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how he stayed with me, believe me. And later on, when you see the documentary, he's interviewed and he says, I couldn't believe this guy who was 57, who never really ran before, was going to do this. And so, there's so many.
He had 3-1 odds you weren't going to make it.
Oh, I'm sure he bet. But he lost. So it was an experience that I'll never forget. And I met people. I always say I saw the heartbeat of this country.
I bet.
I mean, I met people that, I met street gangs. I met all sorts of people, angry dogs, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Snakes who were sunning themselves on the side of the road. I mean, but I had a lot of people who would stop me in disbelief. I look back at it and how could I possibly have done it?
Now, I know the answer to this one because I did read the book, but I know you found yourself in a pretty precarious location at one point. Do you want to tell us that story?
Yeah, I think I know what you're referring to. NBC, that particular day, NBC was with me. Mm-hmm. And they had their big white van, and we're now going into St. Louis. Mm-hmm. And I usually say to the audience, has anybody ever been in St. Louis? And somebody will raise their hand, and I'll say, well, you know about what I'm going to say before I say it.
Mm-hmm.
So I continue to run. And NBC stopped me on one of the streets and said, we'll meet you at the Arch. And I said, well, why don't you go with me all the way? And I'm just wringing wet and so beat up, I remember, at that time. And they said, no, we'll meet you at the Arch. And I said, okay. So I kept running, and pretty soon I'm in part of the city where there's burned out cars and boarded up windows of the homes. There's a street gang on the corner, and they're clapping. And I didn't realize it, but behind me, the crowds on both sides of the road, they circled, made a half circle behind me, and I didn't see that happening. And very quickly, they circled in front of me. So now I'm in the middle of probably 200 people, mm-hmm. and I just stopped and kind of looked around, didn't know what to do, what to say. And all of a sudden, this very, very old man stepped out of the crowd and came right up to my face. Mm-hmm. And he said, "Are you ready?" And I didn't know what to say, so I didn't say anything. Then he stepped back, put his arm out, pointing his finger, and did a 360 circle, which means he was pointing to everybody. Mm-hmm. And then he came back into my face again. We're about 6 inches from each other. And he said, "Let's talk." We had a meeting about life. It was the most enjoyable, memorable day of my run. We talked about, why don't we work together? How come we can't work together? How come we don't love each other? How come we don't understand each other? They threw, everybody in the crowd threw questions at me, and I threw them right back at them. Mm-hmm. And we had what I call a town meeting.
What a shame the media wasn't
afraid
to have that honest conversation.
Absolutely. I mean, I really did see the heartbeat of this country.
Beautiful.
And I heard all of people's issues and why can't we do this, why can't we do that. And I'll never forget that day.
I bet not.
No.
Terry, what was the last step like when you finally got to the end?
Oh, my gosh. We're coming into Atlanta, and they were getting ready for the Olympics, 96 Olympics. And there are people on each side of the road. And in running, they had a finish line for me, a tape mm-hmm. and everything. And there were a lot of nonprofits there because I was representing a lot of nonprofits. And I had to go by this large group of nonprofits, and then I crossed the finish line, and it was like one of my children were born, you know, mm-hmm. that feeling.
I can't even imagine.
And I remember thinking, I did this. How could I? Everybody, yeah. I had doctors who would literally bet that I wouldn't get out of the state.
Well, if I remember, you had a heart attack during it, didn't you?
I had what they thought was a heart attack.
Okay.
I was in the hospital for a night, and I told the doctor, I said, "Look, if you don't find anything by 9 o'clock tomorrow morning, I'm going back out on the
highway. Give me my shoes back."
That's right. But it was
wow.
It was really an interesting experience in my life.
Man, how are we doing?
Okay.
All right. Let me see if I can stick in.
Pause, because when you were telling that story about the crowd around you,
yeah,
I actually legitimately teared up. I can cry right now about that.
Oh,
just
yeah.
the meaningfulness of that, and just able to portray that
yeah.
just
a real moment. Yeah.
Is really.
Oh,
that should happen more, and mm-hmm.
yeah.
most of us are afraid to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why they call me the original Forrest Gump.
Yes.
Oh,
and also an American hero, because I've gone to Washington, I've met two presidents, and, you know, they're all in awe about it. How could this guy do this? I'm not a runner.
Who would do that?
But, you know, I've spoke in Vegas, for example, and I have large groups of 8,000-9,000 people. Mm-hmm. And I go on stage with my jeans and many times a sweatshirt because I'm just a regular guy.
Yeah,
and it's you know, they won't let me off the stage many times because, you know, they come up and they give me hugs and they'll say, "You changed my life tonight." I'm a vet, so I speak to vets about the trouble they're going through.
Mm-hmm. You're a real guy. You're not,
oh yeah,
you're not you know, 6'6" Thor saying, you know, "I could bench press this." You're just a guy who said, "It's all up here."
Yeah.
And if I say I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And you can too.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And people, they want to know that. They want to know that they can do something. They can help somebody across the street, or they can, you know, something little. It doesn't have to be something crazy right. like what I did.
Mm-hmm.
And but that's the idea behind it.
Now, you've also spoken to basketball teams, football teams.
Oh, yeah. You know, everybody has a bad day. Everybody, mm-hmm. you know, I can't run the court anymore. I can't hit that ball anymore.
The fourth, you know, the third period's too much. I'm yeah. tired.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so is Terry.
Yeah, and so I tell him about the story. And the story is very powerful when you really get into it.
Yeah.
Because I don't look like what I did. And
how did you keep going? How did you, I mean, you had to wake up mornings
I quit
and
every
feel
day.
Terrible.
I quit every day.
Yeah.
I mean, it was hard. I you know, it's got to be hard. And, but I never got a blister. I changed my shoes every hour.
Oh,
and,
really?
Yeah, because I didn't want to get a blister.
Mm-hmm.
And I had people who would give me hugs and, you know, everybody help me to take the next step.
All right, Terry, we're going to have to take a quick break here because you know how this works. If these guys don't get paid, we don't get paid. We're getting paid, right?
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you looking for compassionate and dependable home care for you or a loved one? Assisting Hands Home Care, serving Pinellas and Pasco counties, can help.
The day came that taking care of my mother was no longer the best thing for me or for her. Between kids and a job, I couldn't give her the attention she needed and deserved, and I was overwhelmed. So I reached out to Assisting Hands Home Care. Now I can see what an important decision that was, and I feel confident that my mother has compassionate and dependable caregivers who help her to stay happy, healthy, and home. Today, I'm able to visit with my mother and enjoy our time together, which is exactly what we both needed.
Assisting Hands Home Care. Call today for your free in-home consultation. In Pinellas, call 727-748-4211 or visit assistinghands.com. When you can't do it all, give Assisting Hands a call.
Arden Courts is not just a place to live. It's a place to call home. Residential living combined with quality caregiving. This is the philosophy behind Arden Courts. Communities created exclusively for individuals with Alzheimer's disease and related dementia who would benefit from a safe and structured environment. For additional information about any of the unique services Arden Courts provides, call 888-478-2410 to locate a community nearest you. Inquire about our educational seminars, resource library, or support groups, or simply feel free to ask questions you may have about Alzheimer's and related dementias. At Arden Courts, we know, we understand, and we can help because memory care is all we do. Remember, call 888-478-2410 for additional information about any of the unique services Arden Courts provides.
Sean W. Scott has been practicing elder law and qualifying clients for Medicaid for over 30 years. While his practice is in all areas of estate planning, such as durable power of attorney, healthcare surrogates, and wills, he also prides himself on having a 100% accuracy rate on getting clients approved for Medicaid. Why Medicaid, you may ask? Do you want to pay up to $16,000 a month for a nursing home should the time come? Obviously, no one wants to have to endure this cost. So, even though you may have planned well for retirement, the reality is, things happen. Planning ahead is never too soon. You need to make sure your income and assets are protected so that you can take care of you and your loved ones. Florida law is very specific on how and what is protected and how to protect it. Give Sean a call. He can help. 727-539-0181. That's 727-539-0181.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
I think we're coming back.
Okay.
That's us. We're back. All right. Hey, welcome back to Tantalk Radio. This is Rick Incorvia, and I'm here with speaker, motivator, author, activist, entrepreneur, and management consultant Terry Hitchcock. And boy, we're telling some wild stories about a lot of running. 75 consecutive marathons, one a day for 75 days. Unbelievable. But there's so much more to Terry than just this. And I want to get into one thing, the book. Mm-hmm. I'd like you to tell me a little bit about, first of all, A Father's Odyssey, My Run.
I wrote that book. Actually, every night when I was in the trailer, I would write maybe a 1 or 2 pages. It was like my diary. And my idea was, when I get home, if I make it, I'm going to finish a story about my run and what I went through and all the my experiences and what people said to me and so forth. Well, I did. I wrote a book about my experiences, and I didn't realize I could write a book, to be honest with you, but it got a lot of play and a lot of people bought it, and so I thought, wow, this is good. So not too long ago, about 3 years ago, I met a gentleman named Ron Cool, and he happens to live in Clearwater, and he's a biographer. And I was at a function, and he came up to me, and he said, I'd like to do your life story. And I said, no, I'm a very quiet guy. You know, kind of leave me alone.
Mm-hmm.
And he came back a couple of weeks later and said, I really want to do your life story. People need to hear about your life. Mm-hmm. So I finally said, okay, but don't throw me under the bus. And he promised he wouldn't. But I said, the good, bad, and ugly is fine. Mm-hmm. I mean, we all make mistakes. So he spent about a year and a half writing my story. It came out about 7 or 8 months ago. And it's called Living Beyond Impossible, which is a perfect title for my life.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Terry Hitchcock story. And I think you can tell anybody who wants to purchase it, fine. It's I sign it, and so does Ron. But it's a very powerful story. And now Hollywood is working on perhaps a feature movie. And the working title on that is Pushing Life.
Pushing Life. So to answer that question, you go to roncoolbooks.com, and it's Ron, and cool is K-U-L-E, roncoolbooks.com. Now, I understand this documentary was narrated by somebody special. How did that come about?
A very special guy. And I've got to know him very well. I've had dinner with him a couple times. He's the Academy Award winner, Billy Bob Thornton.
No kidding.
And he's not what the media says about him. He's just a great, great human being.
Yeah.
And he never charged a studio anything. And he narrated it, and he wrote some of the music. And just wonderful person. And he called me one day, and he said, tell me about yourself. So I did, and he told me who he was, and I didn't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
But he said,
sure,
look.
Sure you are, pal. Sure it's you.
He said, you know, your story's got to be told.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, he said, whatever it takes, I want to participate in this. And he said, I'll see what I can do. Who do I call? So I gave him the director's phone number in California, and they got together, and Billy Bob said, I want to be part of this, and the rest is history.
Well, speaking of history, you weren't born at age 57. What were you like as a kid?
So could I pause for 1 second? Because sure. I did have a follow-up question that came in from the shoes.
Sure.
So I wanted to ask that before we move on. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that you change shoes every hour?
Yes.
The question is, were they a new pair of shoes or a broken-in pair?
No, they're all New Balance, and they're all new.
Every time new. No yep. blisters?
No blisters. And I use wigwam socks, and I was just very, very careful. I had pain all over my body, everything.
Everything hurt.
Everything hurt, but I didn't want my feet to cause me to stop.
So what kind of thing, what started to go first?
My knees.
Okay. Followed by?
My hips.
Followed by?
I was going to say my mind.
You could say that.
Everything hurt, believe me. I'd wake up. The first day, I ran, 30 miles, whatever it was, and then I went to sleep in the trailer. It was a very large trailer. And somebody let us use it.
Mm-hmm.
And so my son woke me up the next morning. Come on, Dad, let's get up. Mm-hmm. I couldn't move. He had to help me sit on the edge of the bed.
You had to be doubting yourself right then and there for 75 more days.
Let me tell you. And so he got me to stand and to walk. I mean, it was
a terrible idea.
It was. But as my body got accustomed to it, every day was a little better.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You wouldn't think so.
I've already Googled the wigwam socks because that might be a good thing for anyone else out there. So
wigwam socks.
Yeah, wigwam socks.
So sorry, you can go back to the early life now.
Well, before that, Terry, how did you pick which pair of shoes to bronze? I've seen your bronze shoes.
That was a gift that was given to me, a very special gift of one of my pair of shoes, and somebody bronzed them and put a plaque on it. And
I tried to get Terry to bring them here today.
I wish I did. Thank you for at least asking me.
We're going to kick back. We're going to go back in history before 57. Give us just a little bit of childhood and bring us up to before you how you decided to do this run.
Well, my childhood was not something that I would hope any other child would have.
Why?
I was never abused, but I lived with my grandparents, and one day a gentleman kidnapped me, took me to another state, and before that, I used to be angry at my mother, so I would go and sleep in an abandoned car or under a bridge. I was in a street gang, never did anything too bad, but so I had that kind of early life.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a faith that kept getting in the way of doing something, let's say, bad.
Mm-hmm.
The gang would go in this direction, and I would go in this direction. And I just knew that there was something special about, or something in my life that was going to be special. And my grandfather every day would say, there's nothing in life that you can't accomplish. Nothing will be impossible for you. And if you have a dream, don't let anybody take your dream away from you. And that kind of changed my life. This kid who would run away, and then all at once my grandfather would say this. And my grandmother would say, I'd say, I can't do that. I can't do that. And she'd look at me and she would say, ever. Can't never did anything.
Oh,
and so they helped me to look at life and to, and to have a strong faith. And I've always wondered, what am I supposed to do with my life? Mm-hmm. I had a chance to play baseball, Kansas City. I had a chance to be a doctor. I had a doctor who came to me. I was a vet, and I was in the medics. And when I got back home, he said, I see how you help people in trouble and so forth. And he said, I'll tell you what I'll do. If you want, I'll put you through med school and I'll pay it all. And I never forgot that. And 2 days later, I went up to him and I said, thank you very much, but no thank you. And I had all these chances in life. And I thought, there's something I'm supposed to do. And I didn't know what it was. And it was not too long ago, maybe a couple of years ago, I said to God, I said, what do you want me to do? And the answer was, do what you're doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
Help people to look at themselves, to make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
I had five CEOs, and they wanted me to meet with them. And when I'm meeting with an audience, I figure, what is the theme? Like, if it's kids, then it's got to be about, nothing you can't do and mm-hmm. so forth. But with CEOs, it's got to be about leadership. So I taught them leaders and what is a leader today. And two of them invited me to their homes for dinner. And each time, I had dinner with their family. And then they said, come on, let's go in the other room and let's talk. So I went in the other room, and both of them basically said, and these are large companies, and they said, I don't know if I know how to lead anymore. Both of them. And that's a gutsy call to say
huge
to me.
Huge companies. I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. And so I said, look, and I taught him how to be a leader. I taught him, you know, what a leader is today versus maybe when they first came into the job. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of what I do. With kids, which to me is the most difficult audience, I was going to speak to what is called a treehouse. And a treehouse is where kids go. These are the ones that get beat up by their dad. A treehouse is where you go just to be with your friends, and then you go home or wherever home is. So I was asked to speak. So I went up there, and there was a counselor there, and he said, you know, Terry, they won't even speak to me some weeks. And then he looked at me, good luck. Yeah, he said, good luck, Charlie. And so I remember thinking, I got to figure this out with kids. And so I walked on stage, and I have this phrase I use sometimes. I bait my audience. Mm-hmm. So I get them to react. So I said to the kids, there are about 200 of them there, and I said, you know, we're all the same. And this one kid sitting on the floor said, look, Whitey, you don't know what you're talking about. And I thought, okay, Hitchcock, you better be good. So I walked on stage and I said, you know, I don't want to embarrass you, so you acknowledge it inside, but I'm going to raise my hand about something that I've experienced. Two parents living with the grandparents. And then I got in the good stuff, living in the backseat of an abandoned car, living under a bridge, street gang, and then the last was kidnapped. Mm-hmm. And by the time I got halfway through, mm-hmm. I owned them. Mm-hmm. And I taught them all about, if you got a dream, don't let anybody take it away, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. But that wasn't the magic moment. The magic moment was, they got up and they clapped, and then they sat down. And I'm on stage still, and I'm getting uncomfortable because, you know, what am I supposed to do now? So I walked off stage onto the cement floor. This little girl gets up, about 11 years old maybe. She walks down to the main aisle, and she comes up to me, gives me a hug, says, I love you. And then somebody else over here did. And there's 200 kids here. And they had this long line, and they all had to say something to me. And basically it was either we love you or whatever it is. And I'm a perfect stranger. Mm-hmm. And they don't do this with somebody with white hair and, mm-hmm. and so forth. And it was just
a
magical moment. Everybody had something like that to say to me. And I realized that, you know, I've got a message to give to whoever wants to listen. I mean, I've had 5 people. I've had 8,000-9,000 people. I've had football players. I've had baseball players. You know, book clubs, whatever.
So I had a comment.
Yeah.
You said that a couple of years ago, you asked God, what should I be doing? Aren't you glad he didn't say run 75 more marathons?
You know, I have thought of doing that again, but my legs really won't let me do
so
it.
So that's how you want to die. All right. So I did have something I wanted to talk to you about. I read the book, and I know here you are running day after day after day, and every Sunday you would run to a church,
yes.
and they would let you do the sermon. I want to hear a little bit about that.
Well, my son, my team quit about halfway down. And my son, who drove the van, stayed with me because he didn't want to see me die, is what he said to me later on. Mm-hmm. And so he would check the road and talk to people who are doing PR for this and so forth. And so we had a game. The first church that we came to, irregardless of what dimension or denomination or whatever, mm-hmm. We would go and find somebody, and we would convince them that I should do the sermon. And we did it, every Sunday at some church we gave the sermons. And
so to add to this list, priest, preacher.
I do have a title of minister.
Okay.
That I had to train for about a year, and that particular minister would be going and helping people in trouble, and guiding them, and you'd be on call and so forth.
Gosh, I'm worried we're running low on time already. Is there something that you wanted to bring up and talk about, Terry or Jennifer?
Well, we have a documentary, which I think will be ending up in a feature film. Mm-hmm. I know Billy Bob said that because of his band and he plays all over the world, he said he would do a walk-on or something like mm-hmm. that. I would like to hopefully have an interest, people have an interest in that story. It's a powerful, powerful story. And Ron Cool is one of the best writers I've known, and I've known a few. So it's a great book, and both Ron and I will sign it. And I give what I make to children. Nice. Everything I can do for children, I do.
All right, I'm going to do a real quick, how do you get the book again? RonCoolBooks.com, and it's Ron Cool, spelled K-U-L-E, RonCoolBooks.com. And, of course, look up the name Terry Hitchcock, and you'll have more reading than you could imagine, and, mm-hmm. and when you're finished, you can't help but to feel inspired.
And I think if anybody wants to get in touch with me, just take my name, Terry, T-E-R-R-Y, Hitchcock, H-I-T-C-H-C-O-C-K, TerryHitchcock@gmail.com.
Excellent. Okay.
So we can,
it's break time, isn't it?
Take another break.
All right. Once again, we're going to take a quick little break, say hi to our sponsors, and make sure we keep them happy.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Choosing the right chiropractor is an important choice to make. Located in Seminole, the Alexander Spine Center team is trained on the latest chiropractic treatments and technologies. At Alexander Spine Center, you'll find chiropractic and physical therapy care that is safe, effective, and a natural approach to pain and other health-related issues. Chiropractic unlocks your body's potential and natural healing process to ensure your life is a healthy life. We treat clients from the womb to the tomb. Call 727-397-3000 for a free consultation today or visit our website at www.alexanderspinecenter.com.
They take good care of me twice a week. And did you know they got the Reader's Choice Award for 2019 for the best chiropractic in Pinellas County? So check them out.
Arden Courts is not just a place to live. It's a place to call home. Residential living combined with quality caregiving. This is the philosophy behind Arden Courts. Communities created exclusively for individuals with Alzheimer's disease and related dementia who would benefit from a safe and structured environment. For additional information about any of the unique services Arden Courts provides, call 888-478-2410 to locate a community nearest you. Inquire about our educational seminars, resource library or support groups, or simply feel free to ask questions you may have about Alzheimer's and related dementias. At Arden Courts, we know, we understand, and we can help because memory care is all we do. Remember, call 888-478-2410 for additional information about any of the unique services Arden Courts provides.
Guaranteed to make you laugh through your tears, Linda Burhan's book, Good Night and God Bless, is filled with humor and heartfelt inspiration to aid anyone facing the challenge of caring for a loved one at the end of life. Her story offers hope for human strength and understanding of weaknesses during a difficult time. Life doesn't normally prepare us to become a loved one's caregiver. When it happens, it's usually sudden. A diagnosis of an illness, age-related frailty, dementia, and life suddenly is anything but normal. And because we don't even know what we don't know, where do we turn to for help or guidance? In Connecting Caregivers, answers to the questions you didn't know you needed to ask, Linda offers information, education, and inspiration from her own experience and from experts whose advice, practical tools, and personal stories will empower and guide you. Make sure to add these inspiring books to your collection today, available on Amazon.com.
Introducing the life-changing Footbar Walker.
I'm Peggy from Danville, Kentucky, and I'm 91 years old. The Footbar Walker revolutionized my care of George. It absolutely benefits the patient and the caregiver both, and that's the beauty of it. It's so easy to use. It folds up just like a dream. I got it in and out of the car without any effort at all. The saving that I made from having to put him in a nursing home came to about $192,000.
Does someone you love use a walker? Do they struggle to get up from a seated position? Are you a caregiver dealing with physical pain and stress as you help your patient? The Footbar Walker was designed to assist not only the patient, but also the caregiver. Patients have more control standing up, and no lifting from the caregiver is required. See how it works at thefootbarwalker.com. That's thefootbarwalker.com. Peggy, would you recommend the Footbar Walker?
Do I ever? I would not be in the health that I'm in today at this age had it not been for the Footbar Walker.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Okay. Hello and welcome back to the Tan Talk Radio. I'm talking with Terry Hitchcock, speaker, motivator, author, activist, entrepreneur, management consultant. It's too long of a list. We're learning there's a whole lot more to it as well. But we wanted to change gears just a little bit. Obviously, you all know Linda, the person that cares for the caregivers. Well, Terry and I actually met at Aravilla, which is a care facility. My mother is there, and his wife is there, and we've had some pretty interesting times there as well, Terry. You want to take a moment, maybe say just a little something about Aravilla.
Well, Aravilla is where my wife, she has dementia, and it's a memory care place. It's one of the finest places that...
Yes, it is.
That I've ever seen. It's new. It's about a year old. Rick and I have got to know probably everybody there. There's probably about 70 or 80 people there. There's a senator there. There's a doctor. There's all sorts of people. This is a very terrible disease.
Yes.
And we go there because we want to see another part of the world. And
yes.
We meet some wonderful people who live there. And I see my wife every day, and you see your mom. And
a whole lot of other wonderful people.
Oh, yes.
That sometimes meet us for the first time every day.
Yes.
Yeah,
it's very true.
A rough disease. Most of them will recognize a look or... for me, it's... showing up with a smile and you look at them with recognition and they feel like, oh, I must know you and you're friendly.
Yeah.
And you take the time to talk with them. Some have it rougher than others there, but what a great facility.
It's I wouldn't trade it for the world as far as the experience. And I love the place. They have entertainment twice a day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really first class entertainment. And it's the 60s and 50s music, and you look around the room, and everybody knows the songs. And,
right.
Oh, it's great.
Yes, and I'm sure Arden Courts and all these other places, just what a great bunch to care so much about this particular group of people.
Yeah.
And what I find interesting is just by both of you experiencing your loved ones there, that you were able to connect. And, you know, Terry, I've got to meet you for the first time today, but I've been hearing your name so often and how much it's impacted even just our community locally with that.
So. Yeah, it's, you know, it's something in our lives that we'll never forget.
Or maybe we will.
<That's>,
or maybe we will.
There are days when I walk into another room and say, where am I? Or why am I here?
Right.
Or why? Jeez.
Terry, me too. I keep telling Jennifer that There's going to be a room. Yeah, stay tuned. There's going to be a room here for me.
Yes, yes.
We say it lightly, but yeah,
we've been blessed.
Yes, we have. And I'm trying to convince myself that when my time comes, that I don't remember to live in the moment.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And again, remember, so these people have all had such interesting stories. The general
gosh. People from other countries.
Oh, my gosh. It's, yeah.
My wife, one story quickly.
Sure.
So I arrive about 10 o'clock, and she's listening to, she's in an exercise class. And so I grab a chair, and I sit beside her. And she turns around, and she looks at me, and she says very seriously, "Do I know you?" And then she breaks up laughing. Because, you know, she knew who I was.
That's her joke?
Oh, it was. And I said, don't ever do that to me again.
So, Terry, something I know about you. I've been there for a couple now. We have, like you said, there's music twice a day and good.
Yeah,
good entertainment good. Twice a day. Yeah. 10 o'clock and 3 o'clock. I never miss it.
Yeah.
And the other day, I saw you come in with a big book, and you had taken pictures of the singers that come there, and they come there and they take the time to know these people and sing to them, and they get the crowd going like it's a concert. Right from the heart. And I said, you made a beautiful book with pictures and with them mingling there.
It's kind of my way of thanking you for bringing smiles to everybody here, including my wife, including your mom. And I brought tears to their eyes. It's just something I like to do.
Yes.
It's a way of giving back.
Yeah, agreed.
Well, from my experience, just watching when I go there, it's both of you have an impact on more people than you know.
Yeah.
Because it's definitely not just your immediate loved ones.
Yeah. Yeah, they're very lovely people.
Mm-hmm. Not everyone sees that, so.
No.
Appreciate it. All right, you got 1 minute left.
Gosh. That's
a lot.
Now you got me thinking.
I know.
Terry, anything that you wanted to mention?
He's going to go running again. No,
no, I've tried. No, my legs aren't. My legs kind of tell me, what are you doing?
Yeah, you're finished.
Yeah. No, but I love life, and I love to give back, and I want to do a lot more speaking before I get done.
Okay, you hear that? People feel free to reach out to Terry. He's looking to do more speaking and inspire more people. I think it's that time where I'm supposed to thank everybody for joining us. Like us on our Facebook page, Connecting Caregivers Radio. And I look forward to doing this again for you sometime, Linda. Linda wanted me to say hello to everybody and thank you for tuning in. I want to thank Jennifer for helping me out and making sure I don't miss the times, because I would just sit here and talk to Terry all day. Thank you, Terry. And his email is, once again, Terry Hitchcock@gmail.com. I think we're out here.